Okay, I think it's time to start so that we keep up the good tradition being on time in this SDG4 seminar. So once again, my name is Tiina Kontinen, Associate Professor in International Development Studies here and chairing this panel. And this panel is called NDDS panel, and it is a joint workshop with a project, NDDS project, which stands for New Directions in Development Studies and Sustainability. And we are arranging this workshop together with the European Association of Development Training and Research Institutes, EADI. And this workshop also features part of the EADI's 50 years anniversary. So they are 30 years older than our master program. And this kind of EADI jubilee has included a number of several events all over the Europe, and it still continues until the end of the year. And that's why we have also the pleasure to have the president of EADI, Professor Andrew Sumner, to contribute to this workshop today, where we discuss the kind of future directions of development studies and the kind of questions and the debates we have over the identity of development studies. I also would like very warmly welcome everyone, of course, here in the room. Very nice that you are so many attending this workshop today. And I also would like to welcome everyone online, and especially the members of our NDDS project from Tanzania and Zambia and Finland, who are mostly online today, and of course also our colleagues from EADI and other participants who have joined us today online. We are looking forward to your ideas and contributions and hope that technicalities will not hinder us to engage in good discussions. So the program today is that we will first have our principal investigator, Professor Barry Gills from the University of Helsinki, going through a kind of introduction to the NDDS project and its objectives. Then we will have Dr. Shukrani Birigenda from University of Dar es Salaam, who will tell us about the kind of outcome of the project. And after his presentation, we will have Dr. Nyabaya Mudhali from the University of Zambia to give her critical reflections on the process about how we have drafted new directions of development studies in that project. But without further ado, I would like to welcome Barry, who is joining us from the UK to elaborate on the project.
Right. Okay, thank you very much, Tina, and welcome to everyone. First, I want to start with a congratulations to UVascular and all our colleagues there on this 20th year celebration of the program and all that's achieved, and to commend all the students, and also to thank all my colleagues in New Directions in Development Studies for all the work that we've done together and continue to do. And all of those of you who are joining us today from Tanzania and Lusaka, welcome. So to talk about first, like the principles of the whole project as overall, and those are, I'll just under a few categories: continuity, collaboration, collegiality, and criticality, or the guiding principles. And in terms of the first, continuity, why this particular grouping? Well, it builds upon relationships amongst scholars between scholars based in Finland and those in some of our partners in Africa going back 20 years, and previous processes of collaboration that were formal. Some years ago, there was one by the acronym HAIC, which was Higher Education Institutions International Collaboration, which involves some of the same institutions, and also bilateral relationships of cooperation that, between some of the institutions, the five that are part of the group, over many years. So we wanted to, in a sense, it's a continuum and a kind of another phase of a very long established set of relationships between our programs and the staff in them. So we brought together the five institutions that you'll see: University of UVascular, Development Studies, five Development Studies programs, in the five institutions across the continents. University of Helsinki, Development Studies, Global Development Studies, Dodoma in Tanzania, and Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, and University of Zambia, Lusaka. And we started with a commitment by all five, and in a sense, full-time staff or senior responsible person in the staff of the five to sign a memorandum of agreement, committing fully to the project as equals, so that in every way the five institutions were to be equal, and they would bear equal responsibilities and have an equal weight and participation. So we started with a number of, in a way, self-selected volunteer core full-time staff people at each of the five. And also, then we opened up a process of selecting doctoral research candidates who'd be full members, three from each institution. So that gave us a group of 25 plus scholars that would form the actual project, the community, to work together for 2 years. And to do what? One is the process of learning from each other as equals, and that it's a south-south-south-north dialogic process in which every voice is equally respected and listened to, and there's a particular emphasis on the north listening to the south in this particular project. So we are very, very explicitly, there was a decolonial aspect of it from the very start, to say that this is not about the North imparting some sort of sophisticated knowledge to Southern partners. On the contrary, it's the other way around, where the North-based scholars are listening very intently with full respect and openness to the voices and perspectives coming from our partners in the South, in Africa. And so that each institution would take, in a sense, an equal role in the ongoing organization. So we had regular meetings of the full-time staff from each institution. We wanted to include all the research students as equals as well, and try to find the ways to embody that in the dialogic process of the meetings that we would then regularly hold. And so we had a series of activities. Where in part it's the process itself is part of the purpose, is that we want to engage as a community, contemporary community and development studies from across these countries, to learn from each other about our own research, to help the doctoral candidates advance in their skills, their capabilities, their knowledge with each other, to form a community amongst themselves. And so we're all learning constantly about that, and that there's a series of online formal sessions, which involve external speakers as well as speakers from each of the institutions, and doctoral candidates presenting their own work. We had a series of these online sessions hosted by various of the five institutions, and also we had two sessions of intensive sort of rather like a summer school. Both of them occurred in person, where we tried to bring everyone together, the whole 25 plus. One of those sessions was in Helsinki in August, for about 2 weeks, and the other was just recently in Lusaka. Which again, now the curriculum redesign is one aspect of all this that we were doing, which is in a sense operating parallel through ongoing working group processes, and then discussed by the entire 25 plus in great detail, with ample time, in Lusaka, and then a follow-up to that by the working group that was formed to complete it, which you'll hear much more about when I'm finished in a few minutes, from our colleague Shukrani Berigenden, and then Namoya Muntali. So you can see that we were dedicated to the co-construction of knowledge by all of us, by the 25 plus, and that we would find ways in the dialogue to enact that. And as I said, that's every voice is equal, and there's the two elements of both South-South dialogue and South-North dialogue combined simultaneously, but with some special respect for Southern perspectives. That would be a core element, a principle of this project. So we kind of I see it in one way we were trying to embody decolonization of development studies in practice. And we had this aim, as you'll hear later in a few moments, about the curriculum itself. Because here we are in the 21st century, everyone is talking about multiple crises, Severe crises afflicting every region on the planet. There's no ecological system that's immune, for example, from the global climate change and biodiversity loss crises, ecological systems breakdown crises, Earth system dynamics, state change in the dynamics of the planet itself that sustains our life. We're in a situation of huge difficulties, and we thought the field needs to be examined. Critically examined for what we have inherited, all of us, in our particular educational experiences over the decades, and where we think it should go, and make a contribution to that. And then we could share that contribution as we share it with each other to co-construct it together, and then to share it out with our colleagues, our own programs, in our own associations, and so on internationally, which is the next step that we'll be implementing soon. And now that we have the completed document about the curriculum reform, so we the last principle is we're going to critically redesign the development studies curriculum, and then see how useful that document may or may not be in redesigning the programs of our own institutions and other sister institutions going forward, as a contribution, as kind of way of sharing what we did with a wider community, and let them reflect on it, maybe have their own process about it themselves, because this is always, I quite say, periodically a very useful exercise which we're bound to go through in any event. But right now, given what we see, the data that we see increasingly, the consistent old problems, which I think we're all very familiar with in development studies, of the destructive side, the inequalities, the negative sides of development, as well as positive sides. We have a sense of what those are, but we also have a sense that everything is in jeopardy, and that we really have to meet the challenges of our field, because we are also teachers. I mean, where our research agenda should go, and what we should be teaching, and why we should be teaching that to enable and empower our students to do what, as Shukrani was saying in his very, very good keynote, which I was enjoyed listening to just previously today. And thank him for that. So our collegiality is also about a fellowship, that it's also friendships, and that's really important in academia, because we're human beings, and so we wanted to establish that through the process. And I think that we did, and I think we all felt that when we met most recently in Lusaka in person, we had created a fellowship, and it was a fellowship of equals, and so there's no privileging, no hierarchy there. Everyone's cherished, and everyone is respected. And I think it's just so there it is. That's what we've been doing, and we hope it has a meaning for others and will be of some benefit to them as we share it and go forward with them. So I thank everyone, and I'll pass over now to my dear friend Shukrani and Berigin. Thank you.
Thank you, Barry, for the nice introduction to the process. And I would also like to welcome Professor Andy Sumner, who finally got into the meeting due to some technicalities. It's very nice to have you here as well. All right, then we continue with Dr. Shukrani again, who will present the kind of one of the outcomes of the project.
Thank you so much. I will present on the core competencies that we have come in with in the project. And we started with what do we mean by development studies before we come to the core competencies. So together with all of these people, as Gilles was talking about 25 plus, we said that we can define development study as a multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary, and transdisciplinary field of study. Development study is not a discipline, it's a field of study. And it seeks to understand and address the intertwined challenges. Not all, but it includes the socio-economic, political, technological, cultural, and ecological. And all of these have implication to all human beings and as well as nature. So we are saying that there is intertwined challenges between the two, human beings and nature. that human beings affect nature and nature affects human being, and both of them contribute to development. So if you have a if you have a negative relationship with nature, that will affect human beings, and in relationship to that, it will affect development. If you have a problem with human beings, that means your development is not helping human beings, then that again will affect nature. So the relationship is kind of interdependent. And we are saying that, like I said in my first presentation, we are talking about critical challenges, and it is about the structure and the processes, and that we need to reimagine it every day. It's not the question that once we have it and then it is for all. We don't have one thing that it goes on forever. That like we have one definition of development for everyone. We need to reimagine it because it is transformative. And we are saying that can be alternative concepts and theories and practices of development. We stress on the alternative, not that once it is there, then it is the only one. There are always alternatives that exist. Now, the question is, development studies has to find these alternatives. They have to find alternative to the concepts that we use, alternative to the theories that we use, alternative to the practices of development that are in action. So the field is about the interplay of the local, the national, the regional, international processes and structure. And it is both in the global north as well as in the global south. So development is not the question that the south has to learn from the north or the south has to copy from the north. We are saying that development is an ongoing process in both places, in the south as well as in the north. So both hemispheres have the process of development and both have to learn from each other. The north learns from the south, the good things from the south, and the south learns the good things from the north. And we are saying that DS is evolving and it is a critically self-reflective field. And it encompasses realities. And we are saying that, therefore, it should subscribe to methodological pluralism. We don't have one method for development studies. We have pluralism of methods, and we are putting them all together in order to attain this project called development. So we are saying that we need to emphasize participatory field work so as to bridge theory and practice. Remember, I said in the beginning that it is not the question of one person going and saying, this is it. We need to be participatory. The researcher as well and those you are going to research with, you work together. You kind of co-define development. You kind of co-implement development. So it is like Gilles already said, it is listening to each other. The North listening to the South listening to the North. So it becomes participatory. And we are saying development study is holistic. It's also normative. And it should be problem-solving oriented. And it should seek to contribute evidence and recommendation to policymaking and social justice. So it is not simply about us sitting in class and coming up with the definitions of what development study is, giving skills, and it ends there. We need to also bring in the policymakers. We need also to think about the problems of injustices that this project of development is coming up with. So all those need to be taken care of. That is our definition of development studies, and that is where we came from in this project. So from there now, we went to the main competences of development studies. And we said, for us, the main competences of development studies could be five. One is the ideas and theories of development. And the second one, policies and practices of development. The third one, political economy, processes and consequences of development. The fourth one is contextualizing development, the relationship and the processes. And the fifth one is research in development studies. And in all these main competence areas, we also tried to come up with a number of causes that could also lead us into those competences. But time won't be enough, so I won't go into the causes. So the first one, ideas and theories of development. We said that in these main competence, these will be the learning outcomes. That first of all, students will understand and be able to critically reflect on the theories and meanings of the concept of development. In my first presentation, I said one area that we need to put into emphasis is critical thinking, that our students need to critically reflect on these theories and concepts that we are using. They should not think that these are the only ones and these are the perfect ones. They should be able to come and learn them and criticize them and possibly come up with new ideas, new thinking, new theories. And in that way, we are saying that that's the reason why development study is self-reflective. Also, students will be familiar with and be able to critically contrast the tradition and mainstream ideas and theories of development, especially those that are focusing on poverty, inequality, and also post-development and post-colonial debate, one of which we had this morning, the question of decolonization. How do we decolonize these ideas so that we also come up with new ideas that are not like, let's say, left-sided or right-sided, but the ideas that kind of respect all the people and say that we are actually bringing up a project which is common for us all. Then also students will be able to understand the decolonial ideas of development and other alternatives of development. So we are thinking like there is no one thinking of development. There are many other thinking. And some of these right now, they are not in our curriculum. So we need to bring them in. Alternative development theories, such as the Ubuntu, the Bougainville, the Ujamaa, and the Democratic Confederalism. So students will be conversant with these ideas that are shaping development, whether from the liberative ideas of African independence fighters, such as Nyerere, Nkrumah, Kaunda, and others, but also there is a need to continue to reflect on those ideas and come up with new ideas. So development studies is always to prepare these students so that they can come up with new ideas, not simply to learn what exists. The second competence is on policies and practices of development. And here we are saying that students will understand the global architecture of development policies and international aid. Be familiar with the main international, national, and local institutions formulating development policies, and be able to trace how these policies are being turned into practices. So we are saying that it's important also to understand that the international aid might have positive as well as negative. Now, we can't be able to realize if they are negative if we simply buy one idea. that aid is good. By the time we realize that it is bad, we have already made a lot of harm. So there is a need for students to be critical in order to understand how aid, how policies are turning into development practices. And again, students will be able to understand and critically reflect and utilize different tools of analysis and approaches in the management of development projects and community engagement. So it should be in a way that students should learn how to engage the community where development is taking place. It is not simply that, as I said in the beginning, that you simply go and tell them this is development is and this is how it should be done. But it's the question of how do you do it together? Listening from them and them listening from us. So development is a co-creation in this way. It engages the community as well. The third competence is political economy processes and the consequences of development. And here we are saying that students will understand the interventions with their intended and also unintended consequences and be able to reflect current trends of development, such as the implications of fourth industrial revolution in the global south. So it is not always that you have a theory or you have a practice, and then you have, this is the intended, that I intend that it would bring A. Sometimes instead of bringing A, it brings B. And B might not be desired. It might be undesired consequences. So sometimes it's also important for us to reflect. We might simply go on and say that, well, it has brought economic growth. The question is, at what expense? So we, in these competence, we need to think about giving our students this critical skill, and at the end, coming up to say that, well, weighing what we wanted and what we are getting, did we succeed or did not succeed? The intended and the intended, which one is greater than the other? Then also student will understand the basic contradictions in development, including the basic trade-off between economic growth and the environment, the inequalities both at the global level and within a specific nation, and be able to identify who the winners and the losers are. So we are saying that in any development, there are trade-offs. But then sometimes the question is, we kind of try to neglect and say that, well, the people have developed, but then they have developed at which expense? Like, you might have these extraction of natural resources, and then you have economic growth, and we are saying that, well, they have achieved it. But are we sure about the environment? What has the extraction done to the environment? So these are the issues that our students need to understand, and they need to know when they start to talk about development. So these kind of competences will be achieved in these third competence. The fourth competence is contextualizing development, relationships, and processes. Here we are saying that students will be able to contextualize development at different levels, international, regional, and national. So they need to bring all those together to say that at the international level, it is this. At the regional level, it is this. At the national level, it is this. And how they do they interact? How the international affect the national? How the national affect the regional? How all of them affect each other? Students will successfully establish then the relationship that is essential to development. They will be able to analyze dynamics of political, ecological, and economic systems at local communities in the context of global political economy. And lastly, students will be able to critically reflect on the rural-urban nexus in development and engage with diverse knowledge systems such as indigenous development practitioners, Eurocentric, Afrocentric, and other academic discourses. And consequently, students will be able to collaborate and communicate ethically, emotionally intelligent, and professionally with diverse actors such as policymakers, communities, and the media. So we are saying that it is important to understand that there are other knowledge systems apart from what we already have. When we go into these communities, we should understand that they are also indigenous knowledge, and as well as their own ideas of development. Then, what we have, how do we collaborate with what they have? And at the end, how do we communicate it ethically and emotionally intelligently in a way to say that it is not that I'm coming to you to say that I know more than you, but I'm coming to you to learn from you and you to learn from me. And at the end, how do we then make it our project together? It's the same story when we talk to the policymakers. If we go there and make them feel stupid, then they are not going to listen to us. But if we go there and talk to them intelligently in a way to say that, well, we are coming here because we have a common thing here which affects us and you. And the question is, how do I and you together make this project go forward? Then they also understand that, well, here there is something which is in common for both sides. And lastly, research and in development studies. Here we are saying that students will be able to utilize theoretical, empirical, and methodological literature to identify, assess, and make use of relevant research literature to identify research problems. And again, students will be able to conduct independent research based on understanding of the core assumptions and implication of diverse philosophical traditions, including indigenous perspectives towards knowledge production. So we are not simply saying that, well, there is one tradition for all. We are saying that students should also be able to include what is among the people, to go outside there and also learn what exists and bring it back to development studies. So in other words, we are saying research in development studies should be able also to come up with new knowledge. So our students should not simply do research in order to finish their degree, but they should be able to go there and come back with new knowledge in their research. And students will be able then to justify the use of various research methods and hands-on experience of using some conventional or innovative indigenous decolonial social science methods. So the idea is to say that it's not simply that you have all these research methods and you simply go out there and use them, but you need also to say that, why am I using this? So in these competence, students will be able to justify and say, I am using this because of 1, 2, 3. I can't use this because of 1, 2, 3. It is not simply that I am using this because I was taught in class, but should also be able to say that this, I wasn't being taught in class, but this is what I got from the indigenous, and this can be used, and therefore I used it. You justify it. So those are the 5 core competences as we have come up in this project. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Shukrani. Now I would like to invite Dr. Nyamwa to give her critical reflections on the outcome and the process, because she's a kind of critical friend to us, joined the project in the kind of later stages of the project. So welcome.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for this opportunity. As Tina has said, I'm going to use my position as a new member of this project to reflect or maybe provide a critical reflection of the process and the actual curriculum, which is the output. So when we look at the first part, I tried to ask myself, what can we learn in terms of actually crystallizing the process or making it more systematic, right? If somebody else wants to do this, what would they want to know? I came up with three steps, and the first one will be familiar if you work in education, the idea of benchmarking and gap filling. Here, the university sat in their different groups. They looked at their own curriculum and compared it to other universities' curriculum and tried to identify what is similar. Okay. And then the second step is probably what is missing, what is different, what is relevant that we need to add. And the last step is really to think about new content. Okay. And that content, I think, should be inspired by certain discourses in your environment, certain contemporary issues. You might even think about developing certain principles like we did, or having goals. For instance, this project had the goal of responding to global challenges as well as being locally relevant. Okay. Again, we look at the second step now. You move to this step where you have a number of courses. You need to now work as a team. So all the universities sitting together, grouping these courses, and from this kind of work, you should be able to at least have core competencies emerging. Eh? But then again, we are also not saying that you can't table some in advance. I think for a master's course, we understand that you want to develop research skills. Eh? So it's two ways they will emerge, these competencies, but some will be obvious. And this last critical step for me, as the outsider today, is really coming back with maybe a few key team members to reflect on this output, like a curriculum, or rather the curriculum, and ask yourself, look, have we achieved what we wanted to achieve? Is it really in line with the principles that we thought of? Is it really in line with the goals that we are thinking of, right? And in this case, local relevance and responding to global challenges. So for me to do this, I decided to operationalize these goals. Eh? I used the SDGs to reflect global challenges and then looked at the concept of curricular justice in terms of trying to create locally relevant curriculum. So when I use this lens, the SDGs specifically, there are some interesting things that come out. First and foremost, when we look at this curriculum, it does engage with issues of emerging technology. There are a number of those. Obviously, looking at the two sides, the opportunities and the pervasions. And as far as I'm concerned, this really relates to SDG 9, where there's a focus on innovation. But I think it also goes further, to think about issues of responsible innovation, right? So it adds something. I also like to say the idea that this curriculum is trying to look at these new directions and enhance development studies in that way, how we are teaching it, also relates to the quality of education. So we do see some kind of link with SDG 4. Another maybe obvious issue in development studies is this engagement with human-centered development. Okay, going beyond economic growth, definitely this connects to the well-being of global citizenry. Yeah? We are concerned with issues of poverty, hunger, mental and physical health, and we see their relationship to SDGs 1, 2, 3, 4, and 6. Okay. We move on now to some other aspects of the content. Definitely, this curriculum covers courses around sustainable development and green growth that cover a number of environmental concerns and at the same time, obviously, engage with issues of environmental stewardship. So those definitely relate to a whole range of SDGs, 7, 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15. And another issue, or the other content embedded in this curriculum that relates to the SDGs, is the issue of gender, obviously, but also going a bit further to think about the issues of intersectionality and development. And we understand that this is very critical when we look at issues of reducing inequalities. So very much centered on SDGs 5 and 10. The curriculum is also concerned with courses around economic and green growth. That one is directly related to SDG 8. I think a last comment here is around the issue of inclusive and culturally appropriate development. This is something that's embedded in this curriculum, and this is very important in development work, creating mutual understanding. We're all coming from different cultural backgrounds. Culture kind of determines our development priorities. And this is very key for social cohesion, peace, unity, and also development cooperation. So we see there the link with SDGs 16 and 17. So some good coverage. So well done. When we move to the idea of local relevance, here I looked at this concept of curricular justice. This is embedded in the bigger framework of epistemic justice, which looks at mitigating the unfair treatment of certain communities in knowledge-related practices, where you find their voices or their knowledge is not considered legitimate and is definitely not valorized, seen as the best way of thinking, the best way of doing things. When we look at curricular justice specifically, this is really committed to promoting locally relevant content in education programs, what we've been doing on NDDS, as well as accommodating broader knowledge, multiple knowledges. So when I reflect on the curriculum, I see some interesting things, okay? One issue is the idea of being critical of the label of developed nations. What do we mean? Is there a country that's completely developed? So this curriculum tries to decenter the gaze of development studies on LDCs. At the end of the day, we all have to, I think, contend with issues of poverty and inequality in different contexts. So this idea of thinking that one country is completely developed is really not making sense. We need to think about that. Another important issue is around reimagining these definitions and ideas of development. The curriculum engages with that, not looking at it from this Eurocentric perspective. And this is very important because it relates to decolonial thinking and also the ethos of pluralism. Then we move to policy and practice. I think Shukrani has talked a bit about this, the idea that you need to engage with these issues at multiple levels, yeah? And placing more emphasis on maybe the continental and regional level, which are far less engaged with. We might be talking about the World Bank, but what's happening with the Africa Development Bank, right? How much do we know about the AU? We might know more about, the World Bank than we do know, or rather the UN than we do know about the AU and so on. So thinking about those issues. Another issue within this curriculum is the idea of studying less explored forms of collaboration, moving from this idea of north to south cooperation and saying, let's talk about south to south cooperation, let's talk about intracontinental foreign investment, trade, and aid. Let's look into these spaces. And I think the curriculum tries to cover this. And I think a final issue is there is content there that is trying to develop culturally sensitive practitioners. Part of this decolonial agenda is that, right? That kind of cultural sensitivity. so that you know how to engage in a room where there are different cultures, different knowledges, and so on and so forth. And this is also very important when we go back to the issue of how culture and our cultural values have an influence on our development priorities. So there's some content in the curriculum that speaks to this, and that also relates to pluralism. My final thoughts, I think the curriculum does cover a range of issues there, as I tried to show. However, I still remain with maybe two questions that I'm asking all of us. First and foremost, are the SDGs sufficient to define global challenges? Are they covering all the contemporary issues? Are they covering locally relevant issues in terms of development? I picked SDGs. Was it a good choice? I don't know. The other issue is when you look at curriculum justice, I'm talking about accommodating multiple knowledges. And your brain already starts to think, what do we mean, right? How do we do that in development studies and practice? What's the entry point, and which knowledge are we specifically talking about? So I'm being very honest. I think these are the things that need to be thought about by all of us, and I think also within this curriculum under the NDDS project. And with that, I end.
Okay, thank you very much for the reflections. Now we have learned about the NDDS project and the kind of the idea of development studies and what we want to, what this project kind of sees that a program in development studies would like to, what kind of competencies it should provide. And there's, of course, some kind of idea of development studies behind all this. And now we go to the more broader discussion about what development studies, what kind of different kinds of development studies we could kind of identify, and whether there is unity in the diversity. And I would like to invite now President of EAD, Professor Andy Sumner, to provide his reflections on the idea of what development study is, and is there unity in diversity. Andy, please.
Thank you. Okay. So, thank you very much for the invite to share some reflections on development studies and different types of development studies. I was going to say a little bit about development studies and kind of commonalities across development studies, and then talk a little bit about the kind of pluralities and different ways that development studies has evolved into a set of different schools. So, by means of an introduction, I think it's reasonable to say development studies is somewhat of a mature field. Many of the journals, institutes, and the association, including the European Association of Development Institutes, of which I'm president, are around 50 years old, if not older. Of course, you can trace a genealogy beyond the kind of decolonization period of the 50s and 60s. In fact, there's two competing origin stories of development studies. I think one is either the Truman story, where President Truman declared the need to develop the underdeveloped areas, and that rather sort of presents development as a sort of colonial humiliation post-World War II. Of course, you can trace the genealogy back into colonial period. Or there's an origin story of emancipation and the Bandung Conference of 1955, the anti-imperialism of the African and Asian countries, and that kind of aspiration for a national development and a different kind of society and breaking free of colonial chains. I think it's true there seems to be a growing number of programs in postgraduate development studies. So the data here is from the QS rankings. Of course, there's all sorts of problems with this data, and I tend not to pay attention to the rankings, but what it does show you is there's 132 programs that are listed in 32 countries. About 40% is in European universities, just 21% in North America, and 27% in the Global South. Actually, if you look at the number of countries, about 50% of the countries with development studies are in the Global South. So while the total number of programs may be higher in the global north, the actual countries with programs seems to be about even, which I was very surprised about, actually. I thought on the studies, I can see it has a European history of some kind. Presumably, one could link it to the history of European colonialism, but also decolonization in particular, post-Second World War, and the need to sort of think of, understand better the study of societies. I think moving on to the next slide, I think across development studies, there's three things that seem to unify people. The first is the focus on development, although no one can decide exactly what they, no one can agree what it's taken to mean. So everyone's concerned with the development, but discussion of what development is a real flashpoint, actually, for disagreement. Nevertheless, although people define it in different ways, it's clearly the focus or the foundational focus of development studies. I think there's also the purpose is somewhat normative. So many areas of academic inquiry, it's about the inquiry itself, not the real world problems. And so I think development studies is predicated on some kind of progressive politics. I think there's a question mark really about, whose voices count in those politics, and how can you broaden the democratic voice, sort of broader set of people can speak to that kind of orientation. And then finally, there's a very clear commitment to cross-disciplinarity. And then you see on the right-hand side, you can see development studies is kind of situated between area studies, which is perhaps more cultural or regional, and international studies, which is much more about global politics, world politics, international political economy, although those things do overlap with development studies. And then either side of those three cross-disciplinary areas, you can see the disciplines, so development economics, development geography, development sociology, which I think are a little bit separate, because the disciplines are defined by the core concepts of each discipline. So geography is defined by space and place, and of course that can be applied to development. But there are other ways of thinking about core concepts as well. So that's the kind of commonalities. Now let's talk a bit about the kind of the pluralities. If we go to the next slide, thank you. So in terms of development studies, I think if you look at research outputs, student numbers, they're very buoyant, actually, and have been for a long time. Of course, the student numbers, I think, would be dominated by the Global North, given the sheer number of programs, but it seems to be shifting. If you look again at the QS data, there seems to be an expansion of programs, particularly in Asia and Asia Pacific. Many, maybe sort of 15 or 16 emerging economies or middle-income countries have some kind of development studies expertise. You can see, take for example, in South Korea. I guess South Korea, I'm not sure if I would call it part of the global south, although of course it's gone through a transformation over the last 50 years. So it's kind of a historically part of the global south. There are a very large number of universities in South Korea now providing development studies. At the same time, there's a kind of fragmentation whereby development studies are split into several distinct schools of thought. Of course, the kind of classical development studies from the 60s and 70s that was much more economic focused. Now, I think it's still very evident today, perhaps more kind of political economy now. There's a post-development field, which is much more about the kind of the Truman type critique of imperialism, and particularly emphasis on sort of representation and post-structuralist thought. And there's others that I'll come to in a moment. I mean, my central argument is that I feel that development studies is splitting into a set of schools, but actually greater dialogue between those schools on foundation assumptions, I think, would be useful rather than those schools speaking to themselves. If we go on to the next slide, I think the pluralities are really around at least two questions, and several things flow from this. One is the question of framing, and what is or is not desirable development, and is it possible under what conditions? So is development a bit of economic growth, a bit of poverty reduction, or is economic some kind of societal transformation? That societal transformation could be national economic development. It could also be the rejection of economic values or economic assets as a way of thinking about progress. Then on the other side, there's a question of universality. There's been a long-running discussion in development studies about whether development studies should drop the binary of global north, global south, or rich and poor, and study more the rich countries. And we can talk a little bit about that. Some people feel that's the way to go, given some shared problems. Other people feel going down that route tends to wipe the kind of colonial history. It tends to sort of ignore neocolonialism. It tends to treat countries as kind of similar. I mean, yes, there is poverty in all countries, but poverty in the global south is absolute poverty and life and death. Poverty at the moment in the global north is more relative. But who's to say that that won't become absolute poverty in the global north? And actually, probably you could find pockets of absolute poverty in the global north. So if we move on to the next slide, and if we press the button, yeah. So we get this kind of 2x2, that's it, perfect. Where you could think of on the vertical axis the kind of definition of development, and it runs between development as transformatory or development as a better status quo. So a better status quo might just be a bit of economic growth, a bit of poverty reduction. Transformation might be to totally reject economic value as a means to assess development. It could mean a societal transformation of economic development. So it can mean different things. And then on the horizontal axis, we have a discussion between scope, which I put as focus largely on the global south. Of course, you can study the global south within the hierarchy, the global economy, and neocolonialism, or a focus on all countries. All countries are developing, so development studies would study all countries. I guess one question mark about that is that the disciplines tend to study the global north very well. If anything, the global south is somewhat neglected in academia, I think. And so development studies as a rationale to privilege and center southern theories, southern scholars. The challenge is how to do that within, the kind of starting point we're at. And then you get sort of at least four different types of development studies, the kind of classical development studies in the top left, which grew out of the 1950s, 1960s. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. The post-development studies that grew in the 1990s and has become much stronger in recent years, albeit more likely to be labeled post-colonial. These labels are umbrella terms. They are a wide range of approaches under one umbrella. Principally, post-development is the post-structuralist school of thinking about power as discourse, the ability to shape the discourse. It's more about Edward Said, Michel Foucault. I mean, power and politics are a real thing that differs across the schools. Classical development studies, power and politics are about Marx and material political economy. Whereas in post-development, it's about Said, Foucault. I mean, in classical development studies, you also refer to the work of Samir Amin as well. And then on the bottom side, at the bottom of the 2x2, there's a kind of age fragility conflict, which is what age studies is kind of become, and it grew out of classical development studies and become quite narrow in some ways, on focused on the very poorest countries, non-conflict questions. And then finally, the global development studies that I spoke about briefly before. I think this is sort of a lot of interest around this area at the moment. Of course, this is a stylized picture. Much work happens at the overlaps. Maybe the more interesting work happens at the overlaps. Maybe the more interesting work. Also, people move between different quadrants in their career. I think the quadrants work in the sense of they try to describe one particular research output, but they don't describe researchers because even myself, I've moved between quadrants over the course of my career. And then moving on, I'll just say a little bit more about each of them and then wrap up with reflections. So if we can go to the next slide and then on to the next slide, the next one. Yeah. So I think the classical development studies, where that is today is a much stronger focus on national economic development within global value chains, structural transformation of the economy away from a low productivity traditional economy to pick up the sort of Furtado or Lewis type approach to dual economies, which is still very evident in classical development studies. I think it's very dominated by economics and political economy. I think the questions are really how are countries to pursue a major societal transformation? Under what conditions is that possible? We can see that it's happened in China, Malaysia, Thailand, to some extent Indonesia, other parts of East Asia. It certainly historically has been possible. Whether it can be repeated, I think, is a very difficult question, given that many countries are competing directly with China. About 50% of the global manufacturing will be dominated by China by 2030, which makes it much harder in some ways for other countries. I think also countries are competing in a global economy dominated by transnational corporations based in the north, and so it's very difficult to try and sort of compete or set up new companies. If we go to the next slide, we have the post-development school. As I say, I mean, maybe post-structuralist is more accurate, given that this is a school that evolved in the 1990s and has, I think, gone through a lot of acceleration and interest over the last 10 years or so around decolonial critiques. It's essentially a critique of capitalist modernity. So it typically rejects outright capitalist modernity and seeks not only alternative development, but alternatives to development, development defined as capitalist modernity. Disciplinary lenses tend to be more anthropology, sociological. As I say, that sort of explains in some ways the power lens on Edward Said in particular, or Foucault. The questions really are, is any form of development imposed by the, is any form of modernity going to be just if it's imposed by northern interests? How to promote a decolonial or anti-modernity perspective? And that's the, I think that's what the sort of core question in this kind of school of thought. As I said, these are very broad umbrella schools that I've tried to distill down. They within them there is much more nuance than is possible to produce in one slide. The next slide, please. So I think actually, as well as post-development growing in development studies from the 1990s, I think around 2000 or so, this kind of aid studies became aid fragility conflict studies within development studies. So this is really focused on very poor countries, conflict affected, typically aid dependent. Maybe one of the biggest changes in the last 30 years is this split between the global south, between about 30 or 40 countries that have barely seen any improvement in living standards, and about 80 or so, 90 or so countries in the global south that have had very dramatic increases in average income. Now, not everyone has got rich, of course, because those are average income increases, and so there's a very big question about national inequality as well as global inequality. Nevertheless, there's certainly a group of countries that are barely better off now than they were 40 or 50 years ago. A DRC was about $600 per person 40 years ago. DRC is still about $600 per person. In contrast, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, Indonesia was $600 per person. Indonesia is now about $5,000 per person. Of course, there's still poverty and inequality in Indonesia, but resources have been generated that could be used for progressive development. And then, so this is really about how to reduce conflict, how to reduce poverty. It's quite modest in its sort of questions, although they're big questions, but the kind of the notion of development is rather more modest than a transformative development. Economics, political science, very dominant. And then next slide, please. Then the other school, I think you can see in my reflections, is something about global development studies. Now, this has been talked about since at least Dudley Sears' work in the 1970s on development studies in Europe. Dudley Sears applied dependency theory to Europe in a very interesting book. And then this has taken a more kind of prominence with some articles in Development and Change, a paper by Hume and Horner in particular, but others, and reactions to that paper, which were critical. Development is a problem across the North and South. It transcends traditional binaries. Global trends are really important. It's more a kind of geography sociology approach, although not entirely. And so the question is how to respond to these kind of global meta trends like climate change, how to challenge the North-South distinction. Countries face similar problems, albeit with differentiated impact. So how should development studies think about these things? So where does this all come to? Let me try and wrap up in the final slide, please. So I think the first question, does it matter? So any area of inquiry has different opinions. I think the question for me is that the difference in opinions seem very fundamental in development studies. So yes, you have areas of difference in any area of inquiry, but these seem quite foundational. And I think the sort of the lack of discussion on these bigger questions leads to kind of echo chambers. So the schools of thought tend to move towards echo chambers because they have different ways of thinking about ontology and epistemology. I mean, underlying all of this, as I kind of pointed to, is very different ways of thinking about politics, but also the politics of disciplines, which disciplines dominate which schools of thought. I mean, if you think, you have a notion of power and politics around discourse and Edward Said, the notion of politics and power around political economy and Marx, notion of politics and power around institutions. You could think of several other, people, Samir Amin and others. You could think about some of these as political economy, these different ways of thinking about politics and power. I think that's what really explains the difference between the schools. And also, there's many people and some interesting work going on at the boundaries where people were crossing boundaries, mixing with other researchers. This is much more evident at PhD student level and early career. Once you get established in your career, you tend to be quite, I think, a little bit less likely to move between borders, even though you may wish to or try. So the question is how to encourage people to move between borders, between schools. And then what kind of dialogue, whether it's, I mean, there's all sorts of things that could be discussed. I mean, one thing on my mind is whether we should decenter development as a core concept. I appreciate that's probably controversial in development studies. Do we need a justice lens or an inequality lens? How do you relax assumptions? So is modernity always good or always bad? Could you have a good modernity? What would it look like? Does modernity have to be a Western idea? If you go back thousands of years to the cradles of civilization, the six cradles were all in the global South, ancient India, ancient China, Egypt, Mexico, and so forth. There were signs of modernity in those areas in terms of, rationality, organization, bureaucracy. They're not quite the modernity that gets identified as modernity, but modernity maybe is not purely a Western idea. It has broader global roots. So I think those are some of the questions. Thank you very much. I really look forward to hearing what you think. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Andy. Just Andy, out of curiosity, because now we have kind of talking here today and tomorrow about what kind of expertise we should give to our master's students in development studies. So, what is your thinking about these different schools? So, should they somehow, one of those schools be based off one curriculum, or is it so that we should kind of try to teach students all the schools and kind of give them the basics and the kind of ideas how to maybe make the selection?
But my personal view is that master's programs, and indeed any program, should try and introduce students to all of the schools. I appreciate the quickest route to a career is to choose one school and focus on that school and then learn its ways of working, learn the kind of politics of the discipline or politics of the cross-discipline. So there may be a tension between what accelerates your career into academia versus trying to get a plural understanding of knowledge, politics, and development studies. My own personal view is, as I say, that students should be introduced to all of the schools. And in doing that, use that to trigger debate across the different ways of seeing the world. So it may serve a purpose there to stimulate discussion, I hope.